Welcome to the Arts Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. The 89.1 KUAR Evening Jazz programs, among them Haney's Jazz, have a faithful and knowledgeable audience. Don Haney celebrated his 80th birthday recently, so I decided to revisit the interview he and I did about 3 years ago. Among the many programs our public radio stations bring to listeners is a wide variety of music. Classical on KLRE 90.5, of course, is just what it says, but in itself delves deep into centuries and styles. But sister station KUAR, in the daytime providing news and information, after hours caters to lovers of folk, country, bluegrass, blues, and jazz. In this last category, about 4 years ago, a new program began airing at 8 o'clock on Friday nights, Haney's Jazz, now firmly established in the weekend music lineup. Don Haney, the producer and host of the show, also works the board at KUAR during the week. And though knowing who the other was, he and I hardly crossed paths. I've long enjoyed the teasers he creates for each week's show, and commenting on this to him one day, we began talking. Don really knows whereof he speaks, and agreed to join me on the art scene to trace his love of radio and jazz, though he came to UALR Public Radio to be an announcer for KLRE.
The woman responsible for my coming here, that I eventually married, saw an ad in the newspaper and, knowing of my background, suggested that I give some attention to the ad. I was retired at the time, and so I thought about it and I said to myself, well, you're going to need something to do. You're in a new surrounding, a new city. You don't know very many people, so why not give it a try? That's what happened. That's why I showed up here, did the audition.
Bit of announcing, and then you moved to KUAR, which was more your sort of...
Yes, everything about KUAR was in perfect harmony with what I wanted to do.
So, your background then, were you born and grew up in Detroit?
Born and reared in Detroit, as they say. Educated in the public schools of the city of Detroit. Went to university, accomplished a degree.
In what field were you at this point?
In radio and television, as a matter of fact.
So did you start off in high school or before that being interested in doing things on radio?
No. I became interested in radio as a child of about 10 or 11. I would listen intently to the radio broadcasts and decided then that I wanted a career in broadcasting. And I never let go of the idea.
Now, was that also tied in with your love of jazz? Was that sort of concomitant of listening to radio, hearing the music, and finding that this appealed to you enormously as well?
Yes, yes. That was an era where jazz was very, very popular on radio. And I listened to quite a bit of it in order to make a decision as to which kind I enjoyed. Very quickly came to the conclusion that I was interested in the music produced by such bands as Woody Herman, Ted Heath, the dance band in Great Britain. I love Ted Heath, by the way. I have a number of recordings that he made. It just progressed from there.
You know, Detroit for most people now is Motown.
Yes.
Was it as hot for jazz in the years that you became attracted to it? That
very much so. So we had a number of jazz clubs, nightclubs in the city.
Did the greats of jazz come to Detroit and play these clubs so that you could see them live?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Nat King Cole was one of the singers that made quite a number of visits to the city of Detroit. But we had the bands of Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong. There was quite a bit of...
Fats Waller.
Well, Fats Waller, but Fats was an individual that I came along after he passed away.
Oh, okay.
But I listened to a number of his recordings. The city of Detroit developed a number of clubs, jazz clubs. Miles Davis would appear.
Wow.
All the big names in jazz appeared. So I got an opportunity to see and hear many of my favorites.
Now, this was when they were at their peak, or were some of them just beginning and you were able to follow their careers?
Pretty much so, particularly in the case of Miles Davis. He went on to record a number of albums that were great sellers, and that was the time that he came to the city of Detroit. There was another individual that I became very enamored with and still am to some degree, and that's Ahmad Jamal. Ahmad Jamal is a pianist out of Chicago, still lives in Chicago, became a blockbuster of a personality on the piano. And I loved his music, and that became a transition for me into what is called modern jazz, modern to a certain extent.
Well, you and I had a brief conversation not too long ago about the difference, the jazz that you speak of, that you grew up with, and what is now accepted as jazz as composed today.
Yes.
And this is something that is a closed book for me. I don't hear all that much jazz except programs like yours and after hours on KUER at night. But it is something that has an enormous appeal, I think, to young people, but also when you've been exposed to, not to recognize as you did, immediately the draw it had for you, because it was much more endemic to America. Growing up, as I did, in the Far East during the war, when it was, we didn't have radios and things like that, that I can remember, I think I told you this, listening to AFN on the Radio Luxembourg, that frequency, late at night in Scotland, and just loving it. And that was as much as I knew of jazz. When I went to London, it was a different area that I was looking at and being interested in, so I didn't really keep up with what was going on, except you mentioned Nat King Cole and his wonderful songs that were part of my growing years, my teen years, my early 20s, and the appeal that that voice and those lyrics and the way he put them over was just, it marked that period for me.
You know, it's interesting that you should mention Nat King Cole and that I should mention him, because there is a tendency, or has been a tendency, to overlook one facet of his tremendous talent, and that is as a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fabulous pianist. He performed in a number of concerts, public concerts. There was a problem at the time with the unions and musicians. And during one period of his career, he called himself Shorty Nadine, because he didn't want the musicians' union to interfere with his desire to play. And I remember hearing recordings, piano recordings of him, and he was brilliant.
Was this after he'd already made his name as a singer then?
Before.
Oh, yeah. So have you got as many recordings of him just as a pianist?
I have a few of his recordings. They were acetate, and as you know, acetate...
It's fragile.
It's very, very fragile. And but I still have some that I have gotten a hold of and put on my computer. But Nat King Cole was a genius as a pianist. As a matter of fact... he was the man that generated probably Oscar Peterson's greatest respect, because Oscar developed a great appreciation for what Nat Cole did on the piano. And some of the things he did with the piano are reminiscent of the sound that Nat King Cole produced at the time. An interesting sidelight, but one that is very important when you talk about the history of certain musicians.
Well, I did an interview with a pianist who came to play with the symphony last year, who had been totally caught up in the music of George Gershwin and the piano playing, the pianistic ability of him, and had developed a style without realizing it that is as close to Gershwin's as could be possible this far away. So when you get that kind of ability innate to your own skill, it's not quite as facile as those who can imitate the voices and styles and mannerisms of comics the way we've seen.
Sure.
And these are people who can do that. It's more sort of systemic in a way to be, and it's usually just focused on one particular person's
yes.
skill.
Yes.
Now, did you play an instrument yourself, Don?
I had a brief run at the clarinet, and I loaned my clarinet to an individual that my mother knew. He wanted to borrow it to play it, and he wound up selling it.
Oh, my goodness. So you didn't play with a group or anything like that?
I didn't play with a group. I didn't do the music scene as an instrumentalist after that.
Well, going back now to where we branched off to talking about jazz, when you went to university and you got your degrees, where did you go first to be able to fulfill your need to work in radio and maybe involved somehow with jazz?
The first job I took was in Cleveland, Ohio. It was at a radio station that played what was then referred to as rock and roll, but more blues than rock and roll. And it was a radio station that was in the basement of a building that formed the beginning point for the Cleveland transportation system. I was the morning man. The transmitter was held together literally by baling wire, but it was a very popular station in Cleveland. And I quickly learned that that is not or was not the kind of radio that I wanted. So I left there after about 7 months, 8 months, went back to Detroit and decided that I would look elsewhere for jobs. And it turned out that Canada was the country for me. I was hired almost immediately after applying to several radio stations. And as it turned out...
Where did it take you? What city?
It took me to St. Thomas, Ontario. From St. Thomas, it took me to Kitchener, Ontario.
And I know that well.
I'm sorry?
I know Kitchener well.
Yes, yes. I had my most pleasant time in Kitchener. As a matter of fact... my first daughter was born in Kitchener.
It's got that marvelous Mennonite communities in the periphery, which have their market
yes.
every Saturday.
Basically a German town, but one that afforded me the opportunity to do some of the things I wanted to do in radio. And from there, I went back to the United States. And all during my years in college, I was very much interested in working at WJR in Detroit, which was a 50,000-watt, still is, a 50,000-watt clear channel radio station. And that was the apex of broadcasting in Detroit. And I finally convinced them that they should hire me. And I worked there as a staff announcer for 5 years. And that led me to television, to a talk show in Detroit.
Now, was any of this tied up or broken into by having to do military service or anything like that?
No. No, I was lucky enough to avoid being sent to the Army. I don't know how it happened, but it happened. And I never had the opportunity to serve in the armed forces of my country. There was a period just prior to my joining WJR where I worked in a little town called St. Joseph, Michigan. It's in the southwest of Michigan, as a staff announcer there. And then I left there and went back to Canada. Canada represented a great opportunity for me. The people were very nice. The opportunities were there, and I took advantage of them.
And then you feel all that background gave you the links into the radio and television that you found back at home.
Yes, because I wound up doing programs at the CBC in Toronto and traveling around the country, getting to know it. But when all of that came to an end, I decided to retire. I'd just gotten tired of running around the country doing interviews with people. And as I say, I had done a television talk show in Detroit for 13 years. I wanted something else to do.
My guest is Don Haney, host of Haney's Jazz, who is taking us through some of his memories of jazz and radio. What sort of guests did you have that time? Because did you manage to meet and talk to some of these greats of jazz that you have such an admiration for?
Yeah, I had an opportunity to meet and greet Oscar Peterson, but mostly the show concerned itself with local, national, and international politics. I had a number of personalities on the show discussing events that took place around the world. But my interest in jazz was something that came about much later, at least as far as radio is concerned.
Mm-hmm. And did that stem from those days in Detroit, or did you find yourself being attracted further away because of the job opportunities of indulging your jazz love?
I managed to be able to hold on to my love for jazz regardless of what I did in other aspects of radio. As a matter of fact, there was a period, about 5 or 6 years, while in Detroit where I worked for a number of FM stations. And FM stations at the time were not very popular. So they could afford to experiment with all kinds of programming. And one of those experiments was jazz for me. And that just continued.
And so this program that you're doing here, had you done anything similar to this, your Haney's Jazz that you've worked up here? Did you have similar opportunities to develop that style and the obvious wealth of material from which you could draw?
That's an interesting question because when I was involved in jazz radio at the time, it was an experimental stage for me. When I came here, I had an opportunity to and the experience of understanding and learning what I thought audiences would enjoy. And that was to concentrate primarily on music, jazz music, that could be understood. Bands and small groups that indulged in experimental jazz, I didn't think would attract or hold an audience for very long. So my philosophy was and is to present music that people are familiar with. When it comes to singing, artists that choose lyrics that make sense, that are along the poetic lines. And I find that that gives the audience, as well as myself, a great deal of pleasure.
Do you have a chance to listen to new jazz when you're not planning your particular programs?
Some of it.
See or to sense that maybe there are some jazz musicians who are continuing more in the line of what the traditionalists and the greats established in the early days of jazz?
As a matter of fact, I get occasional CDs from companies that present me with the talents of musicians who do that kind of thing. Some of it is extremely interesting, very attractive, and if I can plan it on the show, I do. But I concentrate primarily on music with that makes sense, mm-hmm. songs that have lyrics that people can understand.
Yeah. Now, you obviously have wealth in a library of your own collection, but where do you go for the wider range of materials of people who you remember or who you know well, but you don't necessarily have the piece that you would like to play? Is it accessible through the internet?
The internet, exactly. That's where I go. And as a matter of fact, there are very few sources of that kind of information that is readily available.
Mm-hmm.
But the internet has a wealth of that kind of information and those kinds of music that you can actually listen to.
I was going to say, you have a chance to refresh your memory that the piece you're looking for, this is actually why you wanted it.
Absolutely, yes.
So when you're planning your show each week, and I don't know how far ahead of time you manage to do it, because I know from my own experience that the smaller amount of time you have, the harder it is you have to work to contain what you want to say in it. It's must be very interesting, actually, to figure out, well, I did this last week, and because of what I did last week, I want to build on that and do the next week. Or, well, I've run that its course for this particular session, let's try something new. So do you work within, say, a month's worth of programs that you try and, in your own mind, have a pattern of what you're working toward and then follow up with something else on another occasion?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the show is recorded now 3 weeks in advance. That gives me the opportunity that we are discussing to branch out and do research into the areas of music that I'm most familiar with or that I think the audience might be familiar with. I am very happy to tell you that because of my philosophy of the kind of jazz that I play, the ratings have done extremely well.
I wondered what feedback, if anything, you were getting for the programs that you're running.
Very little feedback. Apparently what I'm doing, the audience enjoys.
And it's a good night, 8 o'clock on a Friday night.
It is. It's an excellent night. Although I would suggest to you that there are other days during the week that could be just as good. It really depends on the caliber and the quality of the music that you play. Audiences will come to you if they hear that you're doing something that they would enjoy.
Yeah.
But you're right, Fridays are perfect days, Friday nights.
Well, I think it's great that you're able to do this, and you do it with such zest and have such love for what you're doing in a field that is almost too classic in a way.
Yes.
For the majority of the population. If you can catch their ear with something that just rings, touches a chord perhaps.
Yes.
A melody that maybe isn't exactly what they remembered, but reminds them of something else. And
yes.
So they'll stop and listen.
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of the things that I steadfastly avoid is providing the kind of musical entertainment that talks down to people who are listening. That's why I say the music that I play hopefully is the kind of music that people can understand and relate to in ways that they have perhaps forgotten because of the passage of time. I recently received quite a number of LPs from a lady whose father had passed away that I plan to use and dedicate to her father.
Were they of pieces that you did not have or did not know as well?
Some of them, yes, some of them. But most of them I had heard of. He was an avid jazz fan. He loved Stan Getz and people like him. And I have most, if not all, of his library that...
There was a strong love for jazz, of course, in Europe, and people were creating their own and, of course, giving home to a lot of American musicians, particularly the African-Americans, who found in France of particular note, but in Britain as well, and Germany. I'm not so sure about Italy and Spain, but certain areas of Europe caught on to jazz in the early days, and it became very popular.
As a matter of fact, a good friend of mine, Ramsey Lewis, was in town not long ago, and we talked, and he told me of a recent visit to Great Britain, and he performed there, and the people were just enthusiastic over what he had done, and he has now dedicated a good portion of his time to composing music, whereas before he didn't compose any music, he just played it. So I'm sure you're absolutely correct. People love, those who live in Britain and Europe, love American artists. But I find that most of the people that Europeans like from America are musicians whose music they can understand. And that was a cue to me.
And there's a certain age group that appeals to more than others. The young, they come and go, and the young, such as you and I were, our life was a slower pace.
Yes, absolutely.
And so sometimes the music mirrored that. Where nowadays the pace is so much faster and the popularity peaks and falls so quickly that you don't have quite that same history.
One of the things that amazed me about the young audiences of today, particularly the university audiences, is their huge enthusiasm for the kind of jazz that we've been talking about. And I suppose one of the things that Dave Brubeck tapped into when he went full bore to perform in universities was this enthusiasm that young people had and have for jazz. And that's great because through that, jazz will not die. It will continue. There are times when you have the ebb and flow of interest in jazz.
Well, that happens with all the arts and music particularly.
Absolutely, yes.
So you're just going with the flow, but helping it along in your own way.
And yes,
I think
absolutely.
It's just great that you do this.
Thank you.
That was Don Haney, host and creator of Haney's Jazz, which airs at 8 each Friday night on FM 89 KUAR. In the time that's left, I'm going to play a bit more of the music we heard at the very beginning, one of Don's most cherished pieces, Legacy by Chuck Mangione with the Rochester Philharmonic.
Thank you.
from the Art Scene Archive. That was an interview with Don Haney that he and I did about 3 years ago. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.